You know, there comes a point in one's life, apparently, where you look back at your life and you assess what importance you had to change or to improve society. I never reached that point. I really don't care.
On the air everywhere, this is New England Broadcasting.
Welcome to the Ron Van Dam Show. Hold on tight. Things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Stay with me now. Stay with me.
Whatever.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the,
Sit back, relax, grab a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, whatever your liquid libation may be in the morning, and join us as we take a look at the world around us. As much as it's a pleasure to be with you, the pleasure is actually all yours. And now, here's your host, Ron Van Dam.
Thank you, Julie. Welcome to the program. I am your host and your purveyor of fun, Ron Van Dam. For those of you that are not familiar with me, this is what I look like. Oh, that's right, it's radio. That throws a wrench into my explanation. I'm a man who has spent his entire life being different than other people, and happily. I look at things, and what I see is sometimes different than what you see, so I do observational stuff. Some people call it observational humor. It's a question as to how funny it is sometimes. But that's what it is. I have an overactive mind, also an overactive bladder, but that's not your business. I have trouble sleeping at night because my mind doesn't stop. My mind says to my mind, "You're tired, go to sleep," and my mind says to my mind in retort, go fuck yourself because I'm not tired. I didn't really curse. I just used the beginning of the word and the end of the word. I think I got away with that one. By the way, I don't curse. I was brought up in a family that did not curse. My father probably cursed, but never in front of me. Ever, never, ever. And my mother, I don't think she even knew what curse words were. She used those southern kind of curse. She wasn't southern at all, but she kind of used those southern expressions to express her anger. Like, slam the door and shut my nose. I don't think that's what she said. It's just an example of something that makes no sense. Well, slice me some pie and put it in my pants. I don't know what that means, but apparently you're making some kind of a statement there. I just don't know what it is. And it's effective because I don't want to probe it any further. So I never cursed as a child. My friends curse sometimes, and I would repulse. My organs would kind of retract whenever I heard a curse word from one of my friends. It's like, you're my friend, and yet you're speaking this language to which I recoil. I cannot handle what's coming out of your mouth. So I just dismissed it. But I never cursed. Then I did broadcast radio for 20 years. Actually 25, but I don't want to brag. And FCC does not let you curse. You can refer to it, but you can't say it. So for 25 years, I continue to train myself to never, ever curse. I would hit my finger with a hammer, and instead of cursing, I would just pretty much wince and go, ow, ow. or make some kind of sarcastic comment about myself. Like, nice going, Ron. Nice going, Ron. That's about the extent of it. Then about 3 years ago, I got into this syndicated podcasting thing. And as a result, my audience grew to a national level. But at the same time, I could curse if I wanted to. But then I couldn't because there were syndicated stations picking up the podcast, and you can't curse on regular broadcast stations, so I still couldn't curse. And then I decided, well, everybody else on podcasts and on internet radio, they can say what they want. So I still don't curse, and I still recoil, and I still don't like it. And when people curse in front of me, I still find it to be apprehensible, because there are words in the English language which can express your pain and your anger that make you sound far more intelligent than just blurting out something that about a piece of feces or the act of lovemaking. By the way, how did the art of lovemaking, that intimate, wonderful bonding experience, become a curse word? What's that about? I can understand the little piece of feces comment, you know, about calling it the noun of the feces. I understand that that would be a curse kind of thing, an ugly kind of thing. But having sex with somebody when properly administered is a beautiful thing, and a joyous and a pleasurable thing, and yet it is used as a curse word. I never quite got that, and I don't think anybody that says it understands what they're saying either. Like when you're frustrated, why don't you go sexually pleasure yourself? Is that supposed to be good or bad? Because I'm confused here. If I went to sexually pleasure myself, as you so indicated by that word, why would that be horrible for me? I will gladly do so pretty soon, probably as soon as our little meeting is over, probably will go do that. Why wouldn't I if I were alone? So to tell me to do that to myself, I'm actually looking forward to that. So your curse is ineffective with me. Your suggestion on what I go do to myself is actually something that I seek to do when I can in order to have enjoyment. So thank you, I guess. Do you understand what I'm saying? All right, let's get back to the original thesis. See, this is what happens. I have an overactive mind. Things go into other things. Very similar to the President of the United States, who can't stay on one topic at all. Ever, because he has a problem. And I think I figured out what the problem is. Sure, there are tons of mental disorders involved. There's no question about it. But it could also be compounding the problem, because recently the Trump guy has kind of demonstrated his lack of humanity in the sense that he doesn't seem to be human anymore. Not that he was greatly before. He was a business tyrant who was full of himself at other people's expense, manipulated them, catapulted his ego beyond any heights whatsoever imagined by man. And yet that was still normal for him. Now he's entered into disorders which I don't think we've even clinically named yet, which I believe in the near future will be called Trumpism. I think he will be named after his own disorder, very similar to Parkinson's disease, a horrible disease. I don't know who Parkinson was, but I kind of figure he had a problem, or he discovered the disease. And by the way, are diseases named after people? Is that something that you want? I woke up this morning and I feel terrible. I feel like I've got Van Damme. Oh, thanks for the compliment there. Or a disease could be named after somebody who solved it. That would be nice, but that wouldn't be a disease anymore. So I don't really understand all that disease naming. Anyway, there will be diseases named after Trump. I guarantee you. There will be a long list of disorders, a longer list than anybody. You'll have to just do the top five disorders because there will be too many to mention. This I got off of Facebook, and I don't do this very often because I don't go to Facebook very often because it's like going to hell in a handbasket or a hay basket or whatever the hell that phrase is. By the way, a lot of people believe that hell, when they speak about hell, they point down to the floor. Heaven is up there, which could be anything off of the planet. That's a little bit more somewhat feasible. But pointing to the center of the earth and pointing to the floor and referring to it as hell always confounded me. Do you really believe that in the center and the core of the earth, there is an area where people go when they're nasty? Whatever. I get confused as to whether people think there's physically a place in the middle of this particular planet where hell exists, or whether that's just like something that is imaginary somewhere else, but we point downward because it's below the floor level. I don't. I'm still working. I think too much. That's the problem. So here's what I think the main problem is with this Trump individual that unfortunately holds a position which scares the hell out of me. Here's his problem. He doesn't sleep. Have you ever gone a few days without sleeping at all? Maybe your nose is stuffed or something and you can't sleep, or you have an incredible headache and you can't sleep, or you're on some kind of medication that doesn't allow you to sleep. You get cranky. You get confused. You make horrible decisions. Horrible decisions. You cannot function. And that's just after a few days sleep. Here's this guy, Donaldo Trump, who doesn't sleep really at all. Most of his tweets take place at 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning. That's the time that most of us are sleeping. He doesn't go to bed early. He sleeps in the White House. I don't think his wife has moved in yet. I think she's still like staying at a hotel. I don't think the President of the United States sleeps at all. That's what scares me. I have been through periods in my life for a few days when I couldn't sleep. Oh my God. Don't put anything in my hands because I'm going to screw it up because I haven't slept. I'm a mess. Here's a man who on a regular basis sleeps very, very little. And when he doesn't sleep, he's doing crazy, wacky things. Most people, when they don't sleep, they watch television, which I believe he does. But they go down to the kitchen and get a ham sandwich or something like that. This man is weird. I think that's the major, that's why he doesn't shut up. That's why he rambles. That's why he says something 1 minute and 2 hours later he says the complete opposite. I don't think anybody knows what's going on in that brain under that carpet on his head. It's because basically whatever disorders he has, and they are numerous, they're compounded by the fact that he just doesn't sleep. He doesn't sleep. When the President of the United States, who commands the entire free world, has the ability to start a war, whatever, can sign executive orders, can just screw things up royally, when this man doesn't sleep, I get concerned. I've been concerned before, but the revelation that he doesn't sleep at all is starting to scare me. Okay, here we go. I got this off of Facebook, as I said, 15 years ago. Imagine this. Imagine Hillary Clinton is president. It almost happened. Not that that would have been great either, But in comparison, anything would have been great. All right, imagine this. Hillary Clinton is president. It's learned that she has deep ties to Putin and the Russian spy agency. Let's just say that. She puts utterly unqualified billionaires in cabinet posts. This is Hillary Clinton. She pursues public policies that benefit her and her billionaire friends. She puts her daughter Chelsea in a position of influence in the West Wing, gives her her own office, and allows her to use that position to forward her own business interests. And Chelsea's husband is her chief advisor, and the chief advisor of Hillary Clinton. The private business trips taken by Chelsea, Hillary's daughter, and her husband are paid for by the taxpayers. We'd be pissed, wouldn't we, about all these things? We'd be pissed if Hillary pulled this crap. Imagine if Hillary Clinton was president and she refused to release any tax returns. She blocks access to the visitor logs in the White House. And her husband, Bill, refuses to live in the White House so far, and our tax dollars are being spent to keep him safe in Chappaqua, where Bill Clinton lives. Imagine Hillary Clinton as president. Hillary spends almost every weekend lounging in her own privately held resort. Imagine that. Her private resort gets reimbursed for any and all official government functions, including security, because she chooses to conduct all her business and personal functions at that location. Imagine Hillary Clinton did that. Imagine that Hillary Clinton and her family live in three White Houses at the same time. Can you imagine that? She'd be criticized, wouldn't she? Imagine Hillary Clinton, in an interview, names the wrong country that she bombed while bragging about the chocolate cake she was eating while the bombing was taking place. Imagine that. Imagine Hillary Clinton was president, and all these things were occurring. She would be lambasted to the wall. She would be maligned and cut down at the heels. Well, what's the point of this? The point is that the outrage, the outcries, the screaming by Republicans would be heard around the world, and impeachment proceedings would already be underway. If Hillary Clinton were president, Republicans would demand impeachment hearings immediately. And by the way, this is not about political party affiliation. Let's face it. If Hillary or any woman or minority candidate had five children from three partners, she would have never survived the primary anyway. That was Trump's situation. Trump survived it because he was a man who had three partners, five children. If Hillary were in that situation, she wouldn't have even gotten close to running. And that is what white, male, rich privilege looks like in this country. It's unfortunate, but it's true. Is that fake news? Is that the fake truth? I really don't know. But it's certainly worth looking at.
You're listening to The Big Show with Ron Van Dam. I wish I could listen to it too. But sometimes he says bad words.
Are you aware that one in every seven Americans is in desperate need of a dope slap? Studies show that every 17 seconds in America, someone writes, says, or does something so incredibly stupid that they deserve to be slapped, and you can help. If someone you know commits an act of boneheaded stupidity, simply extend your hand with the palm facing to the side, draw your arm back, and deliver a sharp, solid blow straight across their forehead. It's called a dope slap. It only takes a moment to perform, but the lesson can last a lifetime. This has been a message from the American Dope Slap Association and Metro South Podcasting.
Indeed. Well, we're talking about sleep deprivation and how it can really mess you up. So let's pursue this. Dr. Raj joins us now, assistant clinical professor at USC in pulmonary critical care, sleep medicine, featured on The Doctors, CNBC, and CBS News, and now this show, which is, wow. We're talking about the facts and the myths of narcolepsy. Some people may not know exactly what narcolepsy is. They understand it has to do with sleep, but what specifically is that?
Well, Ron, narcolepsy is a chronic sleep disorder. And let me just say this, 200,000 people suffer from narcolepsy in the United States of America. And the sad part about this disease is that there's a 10-year delay in making the diagnosis. So what is narcolepsy? Mm-hmm. It's when there's a dysregulation of sleep and wake cycles. My patients are sleeping inappropriately throughout the day, and then at night, they're having multiple arousals. You can see why we definitely need to raise awareness about this disease.
Okay, now, can narcolepsy be due to a multitude of reasons, or is it a specific symptom or specific reason that causes sleep?
I'm digging this question already. Uh-huh. So let me say this, is that I wish we knew exactly what the cause is, but we don't. But we have, there are some genetics that we're studying. We're definitely studying some autoimmunity. Uh-huh. And a huge game changer is we found this important chemical called hypocretin. Oh. But the big thing is that you have secondary causes. So bottom line point is you need to make direct diagnosis. You need to see a sleep doctor. And that's why we're here today. We have our website, which is going to be morethantired.com, which has screeners about narcolepsy, uh-huh, and puts you in touch with physicians that deal with it and that can diagnose it.
Okay. Now, is narcolepsy something that one would have had a struggle with through most of their life? I know that many people, uh-huh, when they reach an older age, their elderly, yep, part of our existence, sleep, mm-hmm, does not come as easily as it did when they were a child.
Yeah. And I like the point you just made up. You know, it's important as we all get older, sleep is not as easy as you think. You know, my patients are on the older side who have multiple arousals during the night, yeah, difficulty maintaining sleep. But let me just go back and say this, is that, okay, you know, that I mentioned about that 10-year delay in diagnosis,
yeah,
is that it gets misdiagnosed. So what are some of those things? People are get tell them that they have depression or anxiety, but younger patients, mm-hmm, ADD. Sometimes, because some of the symptoms of narcolepsy, people get the diagnosis of epilepsy because they get confused with something known as cataplexy. Uh-huh. And let me just tell the listeners right now, what is this cataplexy? It's this loss of muscle control and tone. And this always seems to be the one symptom that Hollywood always brings up. Let me describe this cataplexy, where intense emotion like laughter will make a patient, per se, into their bowl of cereal while they're eating it, which is totally not right and not the most accurate way to describe it. This cataplexy can be very, very subtle. It could be in the arms, the legs, only in the face, slurring of the speech, which goes back to why we need to make the right diagnosis. So I'm really happy about this radio interview because we need to get the awareness out there.
Yeah. Now, I know some of it is due to apnea, sleep apnea, which is a respiratory situation,
right,
which is, of course, serious in itself. But other than that, are there social reasons? In other words, because there are sleep labs, I guess, or, you know,
yeah,
and I've been to a few of them and in my time. And and they tell me, they say, Ron, lie down and go to sleep while you're totally, sure, wired up with things all over you,
yeah,
and you're in a strange place and there's a window and people are listening,
right,
to everything you do.
Yeah,
have a nice sleep. So I don't know how effective.
Well,
Ron,
let me play off you a little bit. You know, I always joke around with my patients that they call the sleep study, but you're right. Few of my patients sleep during the study because you are all wired up looking like Frankenstein.
Yes.
So it is kind of, I think it's a misnomer.
Yeah.
But, and you know, don't get me wrong, you know, 15 to 20 million Americans have obstructive sleep apnea. It's a very serious disease.
Yeah.
And it is a mimicker of narcolepsy in one thing. Sleep apnea can present with excessive daytime sleepiness, just like narcolepsy. And I think that's the key teaching point right there. There's fatigue and there's sleepiness, and they're not exactly the same thing. Uh-huh. And that's why going to morethantired.com, the website, to find out what is excessive daytime sleepiness, screening for what is narcolepsy, is going to be so important. And sometimes, as strange as it may be, I have patients that may have overlap of both sleep disorders, obstructive sleep apnea and narcolepsy, if you can believe that.
I think most things are combinations of things. But I also think that in our social lives that we compound ourselves with all these distractions and lights in the room, and it just might be tough for anybody to get the kind of sleep that they got as a child.
Well, Ron, let me just say this. You know, I mean, supposedly sleep is supposed to be really simple and really easy, but it's not. There's so many aspects that factor into sleep. Is it the right room temperature? Is it the right amount of light? Are you suppressing enough melatonin? Yeah. So once again, it comes down to that. When we talk about, are you at risk for excessive daytime sleepiness and narcolepsy?
Right.
Go to the website that I teamed up with Jazz Pharmaceuticals. I love the screening. I love that it kind of directs you in the, to find the right doctors that have treated narcolepsy in the past. And, you know, make sure that we uncover every stone out there.
Yeah, no question about it. There are so many possibilities. And it is something that we just yawn and we get a little tired and we say, oh, well, but I guess there's more to it than that.
Oh, definitely. I mean, there is a reason why there's a 10-year delay. And I think I'm so glad we talked about the mimickers of the disease, trying to make the right diagnosis, and, you know, bringing up this whole thing about getting, it's not just a sleep study that me and you were joking about. There's actually sleep studies at night plus a napping study during the day. Yeah. So it's a little more complex than everyone thinks out there.
Okay. And again, where we go for more information?
Oh, we're going to go to this wonderful website, and I have to say it's catchy. I love the name, morethantired.com, which is what it is. There's a difference between being tired and being sleepy.
Yeah, excellent. And I can it's a website I can actually remember without writing it down.
I like it. Some of these websites, really, that makes no sense for that name, but this one does. I like it.
I can remember that even though I take Lipitor, so that's pretty good.
Oh, we're talking about cholesterol now. You're throwing me for a curveball. I'm telling you for my sleep expertise, you know.
No, it's just supposed to affect your memory. I don't think it does, but that's what they say anyway. Dr. Raj, thank you so much for your expertise. And I know this, you know, we kidded a little bit, but it is serious. And a lot of people, it does affect their lifestyle and their health when they're not getting enough sleep. So it's of great consideration, actually. Thank you so much for your time today.
Hey, you're very welcome, Ron. Thank you for bringing me on the air and everything. And good luck to your Boston Celtics in the playoffs.
I think they're done. take care. Take care.
All right.
Bye-bye. I don't know if they're done or not. So far, not, but probably will be. That's the pessimistic outlook. And then when it happens positively, then you're surprised and shocked and everything's wonderful. Anyway, we'll be right back after this word.
Do you find yourself feeling depressed, hopeless, having trouble sleeping, struggling with frequent panic attacks, irritability, constant arguments with family?
I know Dad did too. I know that.
Friends. Or even friends of friends on Facebook. Yelling at your phone or computer screen.
Unbelievable.
And the constant urge to pull out your hair. If any of these sound familiar, you may be suffering from TIAD, or Trump-induced anxiety disorder. Impichara may help. Impichara is a prescription medication that may alleviate many symptoms of TIAD. Impichara works on your brain's neurotransmitters and optical receptors, convincing you that Donald Trump has already been impeached. Not all patients have the same reactions, and results may vary.
Okay.
Side effects may include elation, the ability to focus on work and family again, and reconnecting with people you called ignorant fuckfaces on social media.
Boom.
Women that are pregnant or nursing should ask their doctor, as well as their state legislators, if they are allowed to take this medicine. Impichara is not approved for children or adolescents under voting age and should not be taken by those in favor of the current administration, for it may cause thoughts of suicide or spontaneous bowel movements. In rare cases, people have developed a skin condition known as Cheeto face. Tell your doctor right away if you have thoughts of comb-overs or experience a reduction in the size of your hands. Before you decrease or stop taking Impichara, make sure you have disabled instant news alerts on all of your mobile devices.
Things got pretty dark there for a while, but thanks to Impichara, I've elected to be happy. Nice shot.
Talk to your doctor to see if Impichara might be right for you.
Go again.
Also, do it fairly soon before you lose your health insurance.
Have you ever wondered how Ron Van Dam manages to sound so damn sexy podcast after podcast after podcast? It's simple. No pants. Ever. Pants are for suckers. You are listening to The Ron Van Dam Show. Pants-free podcasting at its finest.
I do this every single weekday. I know. I know what you're going to say. I don't know why either. You can hear us right here on the Podbean Network or NewEnglandBroadcasting.com or iTunes, TuneIn Radio, and various other outlets on your smartphone, on your computer, on your tablet, coming out of your shoes. We're just all over the place. I'm around the corner. I'm downstairs in your basement. I'm fooling around with your wife. All that stuff. Hey, Meredith, how are you?
I'm great. How are you today?
Good. Good morning. Would you like a cup of coffee?
I'd like about six, but okay. That would be okay. One. I'll take one.
All right. Well, I can't do anything because I'm on the other coast. They're going to have to get it for you over there.
Okay.
Meredith Sinclair joins us. She's a parenting expert featured on the Today Show, Fox and Friends, the Steve Harvey Show, the Meredith Vieira Show she was on, and parenting blogger for Huffington Post. But she's reached the pinnacle of her career now on this program. Meredith, we're talking about making time for family time, which is, that's been a problem that families have had for quite some time now.
Absolutely. You know, it's because we're all so busy. We're in this era of busyness. Our kids have full schedules. Most parents are working. Both parents are working. A lot of parents have families have double parents working. And plus, then you've got all the digital devices that are taking over our world, not only for our kids, but for us. So our time is really at a premium. And what I've found is we just really have to be more conscious and conscientious about planning family time together and making that a priority.
Yeah, but when do we have time to do something? It used to be when I was growing up, because I'm like 170 years old, feels like, actually, we always had dinner together no matter what, but that's not the case anymore, is it?
No, it's not. In fact, you know, there's a Pew Research Center study just showed that 56% of parents really struggle with just what you're talking about, balancing that home and work, life, and when do we make time to be together. And one thing that I found to be just a great suggestion for parents is to use the everyday moments that you already have to incorporate some fun. So don't be thinking, oh gosh, I've got to add, you know, five more things onto my week that are separate from what I'm already doing. Sometimes we can just turn those everyday moments, breakfast. If your family doesn't have dinner together, like my family, my husband worked very, very late hours for most of the time that my kids were very little. Right. So we had our meal time was breakfast time. So we don't have to get sort of tied to that family dinner. Yeah. We always said, hey, we're having family breakfast. So you can kind of shift that, and, you know, after school time, I'm a big proponent of not overstuffing those schedules for your kids. Leave a day after school that's a little bit more open, so they're not just going from activity to activity to activity, and you plan time for spontaneity. So, you know, you've got to, like, be a little more conscientious about your schedules and your kids' schedules as well.
Okay. So what are some activities that we can do with the kids? Because the kids need that nurturing. As adults, I guess we kind of walk away from it, but we should be there for family. But the kids really do need that craft time and the creative time with one of their parents, at least.
Absolutely. And I've got some great suggestions for your listeners that are just really simple. So one thing I like to do is I created this playlist. And it's not a musical playlist. It's literally a form where I put in categories, morning, after school, weekends, and weeknights.
Okay.
And we put it up on the refrigerator, and our family can add ways that they want to spend time together throughout the week. And we put it somewhere where everybody can see it. So then we try and just check it off as we go throughout the week. And it can be in different times, you know. Sometimes we have a free weeknight, mm-hmm. so maybe we'll play a game. Like you said, the crafts. I love craft time, not only for kids, but like you said, for adults. Because as adults, crafting is really good for us, too. It keeps us creative, and it's a great bonding time with our kids. So I like to have what I call the creativity cupboard. And you can fill it with all kinds of things, recyclable juice boxes, you know, toilet paper rolls, all your crafty things that you've got in your craft boxes. Now, put them in a place that your kids can get to and that you can get to very easily. And keep it very open-ended. So, you know, you can have things that they can make all on their own, but then also... Mm-hmm. One idea that I just love is we've come up with a family time suggestion bottle.
Uh-huh.
Okay, so you take like a empty juicy juice bottle.
Yeah.
I like the really big ones, the big juice bottles.
Right.
So you cut a hole in the side, and then you have everybody add suggestions throughout the week. How I want to, you know, spend time with my family. And then you take and pick one or two or three out, as many as you can during the week or the weekend, and everybody gets to, you know, have their suggestion read. So, again, it's being purposeful, but it's also providing your kids, like with the creativity cupboard and you, some place where they can go to, not just right to the device, which is the easiest thing to grab on some downtime, but you can just have it accessible to them, put it out on the kitchen table, out on your kitchen island, and craft together.
That's pretty cool. That's a good idea. You know, it's funny because the parts of the childhood that I remember are the times when my parents spent time with me. I'll tell stories about my father taking me fishing or my mother and I doing some crafts on the kitchen table. Those are the things you remember through the rest of your life. The other stuff, not so much. but
it's so true.
Yeah.
It's so true. And I mean, I talk to moms all over, you know, all the time. Mom, I'm in the social media world with moms. I speak at conferences, and over again, they tell me the exact same thing. What they remember most with their kids and the most meaningful moments with their children are the same things. They're the simple things. They're the crafting together. They're, you know, when someone says, let's go to the park and just, spur the moment, leave time for spontaneity. Sometimes when you say, hey, we've got an hour, let's just go to the park. And I have another idea for your listeners called our park crawl or a playground crawl that I love. So I don't know about you, but when my kids were littler, we would, you know, in the car, we'd be going by parks all the time on our way to other things.
Yeah.
And my kids would say, oh, that looks like a really fun playground. Can we stop? No, we don't know if we have time to stop. But if you make it intentional to say, like, on a Saturday, all those parks that we pass along the way during those busy carpooling times, we're going to hit them all in one afternoon. We're going to, you know, take snacks, take our juice boxes, and hit all three of them. And then we come home and we say, okay, which one had the best slides? Which one had the best swings?
That's
what was our favorite one?
That's cool.
It's just fun, right?
Yeah.
So, again, that's a great weekend activity. And it surprises your kids when you take... You know, hey, I'm giving you this next 2 hours, and we are just going to go for it. And you get on those swings, too, and you play with them. Because I'll tell you, as grown-ups, if you haven't gotten on a swing lately, that's a great mood booster for grown-ups as well.
It is, yes, although my equilibrium has changed over the years. I've found I can get dizzy really easily now. But
yeah, so you're not jumping off of them like we used to when we were kids?
Yeah, I think my
I still like to try and jump off them. It hasn't like thinks I'm nutty, but I like to, you know, go as high as I can and jump.
Well,
so try that too.
I hope you have good health insurance, Meredith. Now, I know that Juicy Juice is concerned about family time, and they've put together a list of ideas for everybody. Where do we find that list?
Oh, well, this is a great resource. You're right. They're involved in an amazing campaign called 100% Family Time. Mm-hmm. And at juicyjuice.com/family time, your listeners can find all kinds of activities and ideas and even recipes, really simple snack recipes using their 100% juice, no, you know, sugar added. So it's great. I like the gummies. We make Juicy Juice gummies.
Yeah.
Really simple. So yeah, it's a great resource for your listeners. They can just head right on over to there for more of my ideas and ways that they can spend great family time with their kids.
Perfecto. Meredith, thank you for your time today and these ideas, because that's something that we forget to do. I'm glad you reminded us to make those moments happen that people remember through their lives. You got to make them happen. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Thanks. Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Take care.
We're out of time for today. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, I wish you peace. Bye.